welcome to another episode of Fool's Daily. Slightly different episode today, in that I'm doing an intro, and then there'll be something that we recorded elsewhere. We've had a few requests for a slightly more in-depth tactical breakdown on Malifaux models and Malifaux games. So, being the sort of people who like to please our audience, that's what we've done. Now, this is an extract that came out of episode 88 of Malifaux, our other podcast. And in it, Joel talks to James and Lee about a battle that they fought, which you can actually watch as part of James's Malifaux in 15 Minutes YouTube series. And that's it, really. You know, they're going to talk tactics and stuff. So if you're not interested in Malifaux, then hopefully we'll see you next episode. But if you are interested in Malifaux, and you have a little bit of time to spend, I hope you enjoy what's coming up.
You two were involved in a Vassal game recently, weren't you?
Yes.
So we're going to start breaking down which masters you picked, what the scheme pools were, and went from there. So I'd like to start with this strategy and scheme pools you guys played. What was the strategy?
We were playing Squatters' Rights.
Yeah.
Okay. You announced factions.
We did, and I chose Arcanists.
And I started off choosing Rezzers, and after getting winched at by a certain person, changed to Neverborn.
Okay. So, with those two in mind, it comes down to your master selections. With Squatters' Rights in play, you're going to have to spread out across the board. You're going to have to take and hold objectives and prevent your opponent doing the same thing. What was the scheme pool you guys had?
Oh, bear with me, I've got that written down somewhere. Sounds good.
We were playing Assassinate, Deliver a Message, Plant Explosives, and Distract.
Mm.
With a line in the sand.
Yeah. So, James, with that scheme pool, were there any, knowing it as Squatters' Rights, were there any schemes that jumped out of you as things you thought might be easy for your Arcanist to do?
I mean, broadly, it's not an overly challenging scheme pool. The sort of Deliver a Message, Plant Explosives, and Distract are relatively easy when crews have to go and gather around things on the centre line. Mm. There's not a lot of evasion in a game of Squatters' Rights, so those three become relatively easy. Assassinate's always a bit more challenging. Some people like a line in the sand for Squatters' Rights because you're already at the middle line. I tend to find it's a bit too much interacting on the centre line.
And if you get too many models too close, it might be difficult to get all those points down too.
Yeah, I mean, it's slightly easier for some Arcanists than others, but I still think sort of the Deliver a Message, Plant Explosives, Distract are an easy 6 point in that mix.
Mm. And which two did you end up taking?
I went with Plant Explosives and Distract.
Okay, so why not Deliver the Message?
That's more of a personal choice than anything else. I'm not... I don't know, Arcanists, we tend to be a little bit slower, although it doesn't always look like that. And I tend to personally prefer the other two, although there's nothing wrong with either of those three. Two.
Cool. So, Lee, yes. Which master did you end up with for this?
I took the Dreamer.
Okay, and looking at the scheme pool, why did you make that choice? Which schemes did you think were good?
I must admit, I decided I was going to take the Dreamer before I saw the scheme pool. but after seeing the pool, I took out Line in the Sand and I took out Assassinate, because Assassinate's something I'm not comfortable doing unless I've got a real combat master.
Mm-hmm.
A bit of a throwback from last edition where I try and get it done with the master. So I figured that I'd be looking at Plant Explosives and Distract, which is what James took, but I wasn't confident about my ability to be able to place the markers down.
Mm.
So I thought I'd go for Deliver a Message, especially with the Dreamer and the Daydream's sort of ability to move stuff about.
Yeah, so you can get in things in close with then still have the ability to spend those 2 AP.
Yeah.
Cool. Right then, so your scheme pools seem to be fairly obvious selections for both of you. So, James, what was in your crew?
So, I took Karis, just as my master of choice at the moment. Now, I can go one or two ways in Squatters' Rights. I I'm playing Keres and Ramos at the moment, and either are a viable choice against Rezzers, I would have gone with Ramos.
Mm-hmm.
But Keres, I thought I'd need a little bit more mobility for this one, so I went with Keres. So I took Keres with Arcane Reservoir, Blinding Flame, and Grab and Drop. Sort of the standard setup for me. And took the Malifaux Child, a Rail Golem, Captain with Patron's Blessing, which is something I'm trying out more than anything else. Cassandra, Johan, and a Malifaux Raptor, which is again something I'm really experimenting with.
Okay. So there's a couple of models in there I'd like to sort of get a bit more in depth with on you. Why was the Malifaux Child part of the list?
I like the Child as Keres' totem for its ability to cast her Flaming Halo spell. So you can hand out burning amongst your own crew quite efficiently.
What's the benefits of that?
Keres has a lot of burning interaction, but you've got to be careful to make sure. If you try and have her hand the burning out, you tend to end up, first of all, burning Master's AP when you don't need to. The other thing you tend to find with it is it really screws with your activation order. You've got to either activate Keres early or late down the burning out in the right point. Whereas if you've got the Child, it gives you frees up your Master's point in your activation order a lot more.
Okay, that seems to make good sense. And when your models have burning, they get some extra benefits, don't they?
Yeah, the Keres has limited upgrades. She can either take the one I took for this game, which is Grab and Drop, which means any friendly model that activates with burning well within six of her will gain flight and drop a scheme marker at the end of its move.
Very tasty.
Which is very tasty, and doesn't obviously take any damage from the burning either, which is quite nice. So that one's fairly useful. It also gives her an attack action that attacks against the model's height and lets her reposition them and maybe do some damage. This is almost seen as the default choice of the two, although I'm slightly starting to waver on that a little bit, although the grab and drop action is fairly awesome. The other one, the one I didn't take, Purifying Flame, gives you models essentially heal when they would take burning damage at the end of the turn. And it also gives her the ability to drop a couple of 50mm blocking markers.
Oh, so you can put a flame wall up.
Yeah, basically, which does damage as well. And there's some interesting interactions with that and pushing enemy models. There's a lot of pushing Keres is capable of. So you can potentially throw enemy models through the burning terrain, which is quite nice.
That's quite cool. Yeah. So maybe in a more turf war strategy, that could have been something you might have looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you're going to play a more static Keres, sort of have to gather round and hold a point, the other upgrade is probably a little bit better in some respects.
Mm. And you said you were trying out the Malifaux Raptor. What do you felt that brought to the crew?
The idea with the Raptor is broadly essentially to light it on fire and use the effect from the grab and drop upgrade to deliver dynamite, something I managed to do early on with it. And I think there's an advantage that it's probably more useful as well if you're, because it's got that big move, it's got a long movement range on it, it can fly straight up and drop stuff. And I didn't have it in this game because there were less scheme marker related objectives, but you can put practice production on Cassandra and have her essentially drop markers through it, which is also a useful idea. Again, it's something I'm toying with more than something I'm completely sold on as an idea.
Well, I've got to say, the idea of a flaming chicken running around the board does strike me with kind of nice and fun, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so Lee, turn to you. What was in your crew selection?
Started off with the Dreamer. First things I gave him, because I'm still a little paranoid of him being a bit fragile, was the Aether Connection.
Oh, yes, to prevent him healing extra wounds when he damage prevents.
Yeah, so he's incorporeal and stuff like that anyway. So the chance to give him sort of, with a severe, then you're pulling back four of his six. So, you know, that was the first one. I then went for Dreams of Pain. So he was a summoner.
Mm-hmm.
decided that I'd sort of bring in the nightmares that I wanted. And the next one is Tantrum, which gives him Range Expert.
Okay.
So there's a good chance that if Dreamer pops and Chompy comes out, he'll go slow. You know, if people can kill off Chompy, which isn't too difficult. So I'm always concerned about the loss of an AP. So with the Ranged Expert, since his gun is claw, you know, like the old Gunfighter, I sort of went for the Tantrum to give him just a little bit of an extra bite if people did get too close.
It makes sense. You say you chose a summoning upgrade for the Dreamer.
Yes.
And I know that's the limited upgrade that plays against another way of going with him. Is summoning, you think, the way to go for squatters then?
For this, yeah. I've decided on... I had a rough idea of a plan, and I decided that... a lot of the things, the toys you want in a Dreamer crew are quite expensive. So I decided I'd go for it this time and just bring small nightmares in. Just bring Stitch, just bring Insidious Madness. Things that, you know, just to bulk out, annoying to get rid of. So I thought I'll take the sort of the big toys with him to start with and just bring in the small stuff. Because the way I looked at it is then I can drop stuff down. They can't interact this turn, but they can drop melee and stuff like that onto counters.
Okay. So what were the big things you brought?
First thing I took was two Daydreams. It's not the right way around, but... I took Coppelius with no upgrades. I took Graves and Tannen. And I also took Lilitu.
Okay.
So nothing super hitty, but each part of it has its own little thing. The Insidious Madness was just so I had a runner to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, insanely fast. Coppelius, because the terrifying jewels and stuff would be there, and the Daydreams, obviously, with a minus one willpower, aid him. Lilitu, she's got a 4-inch melee, so hopefully she could get two markers in and hold two markers, at least pull stuff towards Coppelius, who she was going to run down with. And then Graves and Tannen. Tannen for the chatty, and Graves to be able to knock people off markers.
Yeah, I think that eventually brings it back to a point. I mean, this was a standard deployment game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And in standard deployment squatters, right, the two sort of outside markers, the ones that are not the centre marker on each side, are only approximately 4 inches apart, aren't they? So someone with a 4-inch melee range in the middle does effectively cover and prevent interaction with the two markers on the other side.
Yeah.
Even at 3-inch melee, you can do that.
Yeah, so having models capable of blocking those markers. I think you had the Captain, James?
Yeah, in principle, with the Captain and Johan with their relic hammers can cover two markers.
Yep, and Wiwitu certainly does it for the Neverborn. Neverborn have a couple of options for that, but we'll get to that later. You have a couple of models in your crew there that aren't nightmares. If we were... you know, Daydreams, the Dreamers, standard fare in Graves and Tannen. What was you thinking between taking those two?
Well, again, other than the big cost thing, so the henchman and Teddy, although Dreamer can bring Teddy in if there's Tannens on the table with his ability to boost any masks. But the idea was that I had to fill jobs first and then look for the thematics of the crew afterwards. I mean, you need a couple of nightmares in there for the Daydreams to be able to do what they do, you know, to pull stuff around and things like that. But Tannen and Graves, I think in that situation, I don't think Neverborn or Ten Thunders even, well, Neverborn especially, I don't think they've got much better that can do what the two of them do together. You know, so I decided what I'd take. I made a list of things I wanted to take first, then took away the ones I couldn't afford and left me with a sort of Graves Tannen. And then I decided to swap in and out to get the nightmares in that I wanted.
Sounds cool, man. A very reasonable way of putting my crew together. So, James, when you saw what we had taken, was there anything there that really gave you pause for thought or made you worried when you saw it or things that you weren't expecting?
I mean, broadly, I wasn't expecting Dreamer. everything from there on down was a bit of a shock. I've only had a. It was more in lack of knowledge around the Dreamer. It's not something I've. I think I've played maybe once before, and on this occasion, so it was sort of. It was quite a good learning experience for me. I think the key thing was sort of understanding the Dreamer and his summoning. Which was fairly new to me. I played Dreamer in first edition, but he's a very different animal now.
Yes, he certainly changes spots. When you saw James's crew, what were your first thoughts?
If I'm honest, I thought, my God, there's lots of relic hammers. There's huge melee, you know, the melee sort of thing is huge. Cassandra's there to give everything, you know, to be dropping the markers and to play with stuff. So looking at the scheme pool, I thought, well, I've lost 6 points to start with.
No way of stopping the schemes.
Yeah, well, you know, a definite. I didn't think I was going to be able to stop plant explosives. And I wondered with that on thing whether or not, you know, after seeing the crew, whether or not Line in the Sand would come out. Because obviously I've seen James play some of these before and I've seen the ability to drop markers everywhere. And I thought, well, he'll be placing them so they're not. Doesn't matter if I've got a 4-inch, you know, melee or chatty or things like that. Because, well, no, chatty would have stopped it anyway, wouldn't it?
Yes, chatty would stop an interact.
Not from, yeah, it would stop the interact, but it wouldn't stop blinding, so it wouldn't stop grab and drops on burning wings and dropping scheme markers.
Because his place still isn't, yeah. So yeah, I was sort of suddenly sort of worried about that and thought, you know, I must now. The only thing I thought I'd do any good on was trying to stop James from getting the strats.
Okay. James, similar thoughts when you saw the scheme pool? How easy did you think it was going to be to stop him going points?
I don't think with that scheme pool it's terribly feasible to play squatters' rights and deny those points. Certainly with that specific scheme pool, it's quite distinct for it. There would be possibly be options. But it would kind of involve either having Karis nowhere near the fight or sort of killing your own stuff to deny, you know, to deny distract. But you'd have to do it in such a degree that it probably wouldn't be worth it. So I think the schemes were locked in pretty much 6-all from the pool on, really.
So it comes down to playing for that strategy and making sure we can deny points where possible. Well, I think that probably sort of sums up the pre-game pretty well, guys. So, for anyone listening, now would be the time to go and watch the video bat rep and hear James's dulcet tones. And you watch the 15 minutes of Maui for sum this up.
Yep, and the link for that, I assume, will be in the show notes. And you can also find it from my blog at mythicfox.com.
And we're back. So, assuming you took your 7 months into it to go and watch the video and found out how things played out, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
when did you think you were going to get the win from that game? It seemed very close, a long way through for me.
If I'm honest, it didn't dawn in until I actually got the cards through with Dreamer. The very last activation that we took, I didn't think I got it until then. I thought, that's it, you know, I'm going to do my usual and draw. I didn't think I could pull anything from... I didn't think I'd lose at that point by the last turn. But until the very last bit where Dreamer worked, I didn't think I'd game.
Mm. Who do you think for the Neverborn your most valuable players were?
For me, it's quite difficult to say, really. It'd have to be the Dreamer, really, just from his ability to do what he did. And then after sort of turn, I think it was turn 4, he swapped into sort of offensive mode at that point. And dropped a few more things, got in a lot closer as trying to give James a target to pull him off the counters, you know, the squat markers to give someone else another chance.
I thought the Stitch themselves did very well for you.
Yeah.
Very hard to disrupt. Being able to heal up and then effectively reactivate for free almost, it seems, is very mean.
I think, I mean, in my opinion of the Dreamer, and I know other people have completely different thoughts, you don't, I mean, I did replace Lilitu after James had got it very quickly. But I didn't, I had the summoning card that Ratty had sorted out, and I just kept looking at it and thinking, you know, if I can keep to the low casts on this, then I can keep spawning stuff whenever I want it. So, and with, like you said, with the heal, anything that once it gets back to one wound after, you know, from a damage action gets reactivate, I was getting, what, sometimes at one point, 6 activations from the Stitched alone.
Yeah, it's pretty mean. So, James, commiserations. It was very close, though. You commented on the end, and you sort of break down at the end how, where you think the game went wrong with the interactions of moving Cassandra around. Is that, you think, the key point and turning point in the game for you, or was there something else?
I mean, I think that's a, that, that's a key error, and that, that was the message. You know, I think anyone watching the video, I think that, that was a key point I would pull out from there. I think there were certainly places I could have made it easier on myself in terms of crew selection. I think if, you know, if I'd have taken a slightly different crew, I could have given Lee a few more problems. Joss particularly would have helped out immensely there. You know, that would have made it quite a different game. I think it looks closer than it probably is. I mean, I think I comment in the video, there's probably, by the end of turn two, it's fairly clear I can't win the game. The loss is probably not, you know, doesn't really happen until the final turn, but it can't be better than a draw from me, probably from the end of turn two, early turn three. There's not a lot of options from that point, and I think crew selection plays a fairly core role in that.
So, I think on crew selection, who do you think your most valuable sort of players were?
I'm gonna say Cassandra as ever, really. Cassandra did a lot of good work in there. I think the more I play with the captain, the less convinced I am by him. But I think probably Cassandra was the sort of the, you know, lady of the match, as it were.
Okay, so turn to you. So we talked about the best pieces. Is there anything you would have dropped from that list and think didn't really pull their weight in this matchup?
No, I don't. I really don't. Sort of. I mean, I could say one of the Insidious Madness is the one that I bought to start with. He didn't do what he did, but he did his having to cheat for flips and things around him. I think, you know, that sort of, he did enough that way. He didn't actually paralyze anyone. He didn't really get anyone. He was there, and I think he was just another model to give a bit of threat to, that James always had to make sure was covered. But I think out of everyone, I think he was probably, you know, maybe the Insidious Madnesses, but I don't think anything went wrong. I don't think any models were, you know, I wouldn't swap anything else out to put anything else in.
I think it was very solid. The one thing I would say as well about the way you played it, and possibly that doesn't come through in the video, is you did absolutely the right thing in the summoning, burning the stones, getting the summon every turn.
Yeah, I mean, that was the one thing I used. I think it's 5 of the 6 stones I started with, didn't I? I think I pulled cards every single turn.
Yeah, pulling cards and using, and just getting the suits for the summoning. And this is something, you know, playing by the Master Ramos is, you know, he's a big summoner. And just being prepared to just throw a stone every turn to get, make sure that the summoning is working, that you're ramping those models up, is vital. And I think you played that very well.
So even with the very high cost of the upgrade for summoning, which I think is 5 stones, is that right,
Wayne? Yes, 5 stones, yeah.
You're still going to need quite a high cache of stones there to actually fund that some, as well, aren't you?
Yeah, no, he needs, Dreamer needs at least 5, minimum I'll ever take with him at the moment is 5. 6, 7 if I can. Just because there are times when you can't get the right card in, you don't want to sacrifice one of the daydreams to give him the additional mask. So it's worth, I think I did it a couple of times where I stoned in to get, you know, used a stone to pull the right model in. And then, or another one, I think I even did it so I put the mask in.
Yep.
Not the mask, the the crow, so the model came in without the slow.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, sounds good. James, how was your experimenting with a few models in your crew? Is there any that you feel really didn't do the job and are going to be swiftly dropped?
I'm probably not going to run the Raptor again, unless it's a very specific circumstance. I think he's probably going back to the bench. Like I say, the captain I keep experimenting with, and I think he's probably a little bit too expensive for what he does. He's probably 12 stones worth of model, but I think it's all too evened out amongst the different types of things he can do to make him viable. So I think those are two that'll probably go. I think the other thing that I'm going to say most of the crew here, if I'm not careful, but the one thing I've been playing a lot with the Rail Golem. And the Rail Golem is one of those models that either does something or nothing. It's never worth 11 stones. It's either worth about 6 or it's worth about 15. But in any given game, it will either sort of eat, Rail Golem done gone ate someone's crew or nothing. As it has done in the last two videos of these I've produced. The first time it was essentially entirely my fault that happened, but the second time he's one of these models that's incredibly swingy. So when you bring him in, you are essentially rolling the dice as to what kind of monster you're going to get.
Yeah, if he misses a trigger or hits the wrong kind of thing, doesn't he? Just stops, doesn't he?
This is the thing. And the other thing you'll see is I played a game with him the other week, and not one that's videoed, but he had something like 4 or 5 attacks in a given turn and missed every single one of them. Because even with positive flips, you are only ML5. Mm. If you get a couple of bad flips or your opponent gets a couple of good flips and is willing to cheat a bit in there, you can't force the damn, you can't force hits from ML5 very easily. So you are entirely relying on kind of weight of cards.
Mm.
And when you're also flipping, if your locomotions aren't hitting naturally, which they won't do, all the time, you're gonna really sort of slow down, and he's not gonna do great guns for you. But then again, every now and again, he's going to ruin your opponent's day.
he might be worth picking just for that.
it's hard not to love him, but I think from a competitive standpoint, he's not as efficient as he could be.
Mm. Now, we mentioned to you a moment ago about the Dreamers needing his high amount of stones to fund the summoning there. How about Keris? What's her position like on stones?
I mean, she's pretty good good on stones. I think broadly, you're kind of looking for stones intimately to defend her. She can be a little bit easy to kill. But she's not, she comes with 4 basic, and the more I play, the less I'm taking over and above that. I think you probably get away with 5 or 4 fairly easily, especially if you're taking something like Arcane Reservoir, so you've got access to a few more cards. And in a pinch, she has abilities to draw cards as well, so that's not as vital. So I don't think she needs to go overboard on stones, although there are times when you're going to want certain suits.
Mm, yeah, definitely. So, a couple of final questions.
Yeah.
Was there anything in James's crew that kind of really impressed you, or a tactic that you thought that you kind of made note of and filed away for a rainy day?
Cassandra impressed me again. Just because she seemed to take one whole sort of marker and seemed to be able to tie up at least 2 or 3 models of mine. Luckily, I'd already out sort of summoned James anyway, so I had the spare models to go round. And believe it or not, the captain scared me the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because of his hammer and because of what he can do and the fact that he kept, he's got the ability to push me out of the way, I was more worried about having the Dreamer's line of sight blocked or his ability to heal people. I mean, I do know, I think it was, I can't remember if it was the second or third turn that I actually got Chompy out. I didn't do, I summoned, or turn two, summoned, just to get Dreamer to waking 4. Just to walk Chompy across the table so the Dreamer was in a better position. No action to drop the Dreamer back out so everyone healed 3 on their next activation.
Jump to model Chompy in a black cab now.
Yeah, it's a little bit sort of sad. I must admit, afterwards, I did feel bad because I can't remember how long I went on about how I'm never going to use the summon and upgrade because Chompy is what it's all about. And now I have a wonder that Chompy only ever pops out to say hello and then goes away.
Now he plays a cameo role.
Yeah.
Jim, was there anything in Wii's crew that you were quite impressed with that you'd be looking to do if you ever got to Dreamer?
Yeah, I mean, having played it, I was really tempted to get my Nightmare Chompy out and have a couple of games, actually, having played him in first. I think it was interesting to see how he'd interacted. I think the way I'd looked, I mean, Tan and Graves I've played many times before, and they are always worth their money. I think the ones I'd look out for actually is taking out Daydreams. Back to the first edition of Strategy, if you can shoot a Daydream, do.
Yeah, and I it think was always this, a good one.
Yeah, it's never been a bad plan. I think there is something to that because it shuts down so much of the mobility of the crew and so much of the utility in the crew if you can start just picking those guys off the board.
Definitely, definitely. Well, guys, thank you both very much for your time. It's been really excellent to host you both, and I've learned a lot just from the conversation. I hope that people listen to the beatdown, as Mike would say. We need Mike back for that. Hope he's good for that. I hope that people listen to it will give us some useful feedback on this. If this is the kind of thing you'd like to do, and I think linking it to your 15-minute marathon videos is probably the way to go with this, so people can watch it for themselves rather than just hear about it, James. I think maybe we'll get some feedback. Maybe we'll do some more of these. And hopefully have you guys back at some point.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful. So,
since this is going to be a part of the Fool's Daily, I've been Joel.
I've been James.
And I've been Lee.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.